I'm David Fetter, Executive Editor Technical for Prepared Foods, and welcome to a Prepared Foods expert presentation on what's happening today in organic and natural food and beverage product development. With me today is Allison Rittman. She's a research chef and expert on the art and craft of creating organic foods and beverages. And Ms. Rittman is one of the first women to become a certified research chef. She has more than 30 years of experience in product and menu development. She started when she was five. She has been in charge of national account presentations and culinary trends. And she has a degree in biological sciences from the University of Iowa, where my daughter goes, and another in culinary arts from the Culinary Institute of America, the other CIA. Chef Allison established Culinary Culture, a company specializing in culinary-focused product development, and it's based right here near me in Austin, Texas, as she is. Hey, hi, Allison. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for the invite. I appreciate it.
Glad to have you here. With the organic trend becoming like a veritable juggernaut, thanks to recent events that led consumers to pay greater attention to health of the planet and themselves, let's dive in. What do you see as the key current trends in product development in the organic and natural field?
Yeah, well, thank you. I think that really one thing that's changing all of the trends is the really interesting change in demographics that we're seeing. We're seeing consumers shifting from large cities out to smaller areas, to the suburbs, to rural areas. And they're obviously taking those food preferences with them. So I think that's something that's really playing into the overall food trend market. And along with that, just the focus on Gen Z and millennials, right? They're mm-hmm. coming into their buying power, and they're really changing what they think about food and the way they eat. So they have a very different value aspect of what food choices mean to them than do previous generations. So I think that's all playing into that, food trend environment and how it's affecting the organic and natural market. And we're definitely seeing this health focus, right? Where everybody yeah. wants food as medicine. Consumers are focusing on the idea of organic and natural, and they have this perception that those are healthier for them. That's not necessarily the case, but I think that consumer education kind of goes hand in hand with that piece of looking at labels, understanding clean label, understanding natural and organic, and really doing a deep dive into what those mean. So right. obviously manufacturers have to follow suit and make sure that they're being proactive on that as well. Whether that means natural sweeteners, focusing even on things like consumers' emotional well-being. It doesn't have to be a health focus like low sodium or low fat or, natural sweeteners. It really has to be a whole package deal. So adaptogens, things that make people feel just a little bit better about eating their food.
What other key current trends are you noticing?
One thing I'm really excited about is the change in technology. So I think there are quite a few technologies that are coming on board that could really play a big focus. So, with processing, everything changes. You have new technologies that come out that offer greater opportunities. Things like high pressure processing, things like the pulsed electronic field. I think all of these things are really exciting and are adding to the opportunities of what we can do. How can we produce better quality, more nutritious products that just taste better to consumers and consumers are willing to buy that have cleaner labels? So I think that's exciting as well.
How is the organic certification when it comes to things like you mentioned, pulsed electric field, HPP? You also earlier brought up before this, you've talked to me about high powered ultrasound and that kind of do those still fall into the organic certification parameters?
Yeah, I think it depends on the specific parameters of that technology. So some of these things are new and haven't been looked at very closely for organic, but many of them have. And things like irradiation are definitely off the table. That has been made very clear. So some technologies
are off the table. Irradiation's
off the table.
Right.
And the agencies have made that very clear. This is a line you cannot cross. And so I think things like HPP make natural sense. The high pressure processing, there's nothing really in that realm that is artificial or adding synthetic, you know, technologies or ingredients or processes that would inhibit, you know, getting an organic certification. So I think it just depends on the technology and what comes down the pipeline. But the ones that we've mentioned look fairly innocuous.
Got it. So, and then are we missing any of the more, what would you say, like the social concepts behind organic? Are some of those?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think those are starting to come into play not just with organic and natural products, but I think that idea of social consciousness, everything from sustainability and vertical farming and mycoproteins, right? The kind of fun new things that we're seeing that have been going on for a while, but consumers are just starting to see those. Upcycling, I think, is a huge, right? Think about upcycling and reducing food waste to consumers. And then the other piece, I think, to that is really the food with a purpose. I love that companies are really thinking about what's important to especially Gen Z and younger millennials. And some of that is, well, why should I buy this product from company A versus company B? Tell me what you're doing to help the local community, the world, the planet. And so I think that attachment to that social consciousness and food with a purpose is being attached to all products. But I think the consumer that's buying organic and natural products are particularly interested in that aspect of it.
Oh, absolutely. About 10 years or so ago, I coined the term social ingredient. And yes. I think that's, I agree with you, that's quite a big issue now, social ingredients. So jumping over to the actual creation of, you know, the hands-on creation of organic or, you know, switching to organic, what would you say would be the biggest challenge for a food or beverage maker who wanted to switch to an all organic processing paradigm?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing is a lot of manufacturers are dipping their toe into that piece. And so they're not just saying we're going to completely turn this plant into a 100% organic manufacturing facility. They might do both. They might do conventional and organic. So the facility still has the same requirements. You have to go through a fairly detailed certification process, and that costs money. And there's effort involved, right? It's a big effort to plan for organic certification and to receive that. So you have to keep ingredients stored separately, for example, from conventional ingredients. So it's not as simple as let's just go out and fill out some paperwork and have somebody come in and look at our facility and get certified and we're off and running. It really is an investment in time and money.
What other big challenges do you see for that food or beverage maker making the switch?
I think if you switch 100%, one of the challenges that you really have to overcome as a manufacturer is understanding that consumer mindset. Mm-hmm. So if you are used to an everyday average consumer, so to speak, and now you're switching all your products to organic, natural, clean label, and that's all you're doing, that's a very different consumer, right? They have a very different mindset about what clean label is to them versus somebody who, you know, doesn't care as much, but is still a label reader. So I think that overall mindset about what that consumer is expecting to be delivered, even some of that is consumer education. When we talk about things that are organic compliant, but not necessarily organic, like gelling gum for beverages or xanthan gum, a consumer might see that on an organic product and it's allowed, right? It's not illegal to put that on there at all. And they're functional ingredients that are helpful. Part of that is consumer education and how manufacturers and companies are spreading that information that gelling gum is a natural ingredient. You know, just because you don't necessarily have xanthan gum on your grandma's pantry shelf, that doesn't mean that it's something that's not wholesome or, you know, great to put in food as a functional ingredient. So I think some of that is spreading downhill of just educating consumers on what is okay on that label.
When you go in to help a product developer or product manufacturer make the switch and go organic, Tell us what are Chef Allison's five key rules for the developer or manufacturer who's going organic.
I think the most important thing is to really decide upfront what that product is going to look like. And when I say what that product's going to look like, I really mean what level of organic are you going for? So if you want to say this is a 100% organic product, that has different labeling and regulation requirements than something that contains 95% organic ingredients, which you can say is organic lemon juice, for example. And it's very different than if you have 70% organic ingredients where you can put contains organic lemons or, you know, individual ingredients on your ingredient deck. So really deciding what that is before you go out and source the ingredients and make those formulations, it's really important to kind of understand where that lies. And the reason we say that is we have been in situations, right, where somebody said, oh, well, we just wanted to say it had organic ingredients and we thought that was good enough. And in focus groups, our consumers said, no, that's not good enough. Like you have to say it's organic or I'm probably not going to buy it. So you really have to understand what your consumer wants and what they're asking for. So when you have to go back and reformulate from 70% organic ingredients to 95%, that can be quite substantial as far as, you know, cost and who are your ingredient suppliers? Where do you find those ingredients? And do they taste different? Are they slightly different because they're a different supplier? And it's not a negative, like they taste better or worse. It's just, they might be slightly different because they are from a different supplier. So I think that is the most important thing is to really understand where your starting point is and go for that goal from the start. So when you go to source those ingredients, you know, you are looking for, you know, reputable, reliable ingredient suppliers that are more than willing to give you their organic certification certificate. All of their ingredients come with a certificate that says who they're certified organic by, understanding their minimum order quantities for organics. That can be a make or break it, especially for a smaller manufacturer.
That's a huge consideration, actually.
It really is. It can be a breaking point for many because these are higher ingredient cost, right? So they have typically higher MOQs, or you just have to find the right supplier that's willing to break down those pallets for sell you a 50-pound bag instead of a 500 pallets.
Train load.
Yes. Yes.
I was consulting with a small company that needed an organic dried fruit ingredient, and they could not get less than an 11,000 pound truckload, and they were a startup, and just at the end of the day, they just couldn't do it. So I know exactly what you're talking about. Didn't mean to cut in on that, but understanding the, you know, what you want to make and the regulations surrounding it as key rule number one, sourcing rule number two. So what are the rest of the five rules that you have when you're steering someone into organic?
Yeah, I think that finding the right co-packer, and that doesn't necessarily mean that, okay, yes, they are certified organic, which is kind of that baseline of if you're making an organic product, you have to have. So it's you can't waffle on that, right? It's a given. But there's different co-packers and they all have different philosophies. They all have different minimum order quantities of what they can run. They all do different pricing structures. They're willing to work with people a little bit more closely, some up more than others. So really think of it like an interview. And sometimes just like the job market is right now, the interview can be one-sided, right? So right now, co-packers are fairly full. They have more business than they know what to do with. Wow. And they can be picky. So a lot of times we have had struggles finding some co-packers for some of our smaller startup companies or companies that are just dipping their toe into it and don't want to do large runs. So I think right now it's kind of make sure you have a backup, not just for your ingredients, source supplies. I mean, we've all seen the supply chain issues and it's impacted everything I do every day. It feels like it's something you always have to keep in the forefront. But it's the same with co-packers right now, because they might say, I'm sorry, we just can't continue to do this because we have a bigger opportunity coming down the pipeline. And that's something that I haven't seen before.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I know a couple of companies that went under for that very reason. So to our audience out there, this is a great opportunity if you want to horizontally integrate into co-packing.
Absolutely.
Okay. So we've got knowing how you want your product to look and be within the regulations. We have sourcing, the co-packer manufacturer, get that set. And numbers 4 and 5.
I think cost is a huge one. You have to think about this up front, no matter what product you're developing. But with organic, it's really important to be realistic, right? to not have expectations that you're going to come in and have a product that is going to be, you know, competing at the same level. I know there are companies that have done that. And I think that it's unrealistic, especially for the smaller startups or smaller companies, the smaller volumes, to expect that those ingredients are going to be the same as a conventional product. And it's unrealistic, right? We think of having to leave your land fallow for 3 years before you can ever sell a product, a grain, for example, as organic, or tomatoes. That's a huge cost liability to somebody who is a grower. So when you look at the cost of organic tomatoes versus regular tomatoes, of course, they are going to be higher. You also have lower crop yield, right? You have all the things that kind of play into that cost parameter.
And so high demand. It's,
absolutely. So I think it's really important to just be realistic about the cost piece up front and what that looks like. And understand, I think, is number 5. Understand that there's going to be sacrifices. Yes. This is also with any product. We always tell people that, you know, your great product that you put on the stovetop that you made, you know, that you have your Chef Gold standard, which is a great place to start. It's going to look different when you have to move it to a manufacturing facility. And now it's not just a manufacturing facility, but it's a smaller subset. There's only so many organic, right, facilities. And then you have to look at limited supply of ingredients. So you're kind of narrowing down the tunnel of your options for creating that product in millions of pounds versus, you know, a gold Chef Gold standard. So we try to get as close as we can, but just being understanding of the fact that there might be some limitations to that.
Yeah. And this is true for all manufacturers of you know, foods and beverages, that it won't look the same as it did in your kitchen.
Absolutely.
But jumping back to prices, I have seen that, although certainly not even parity, the price of organic ingredients has been coming down, you know, as supply increases, and even though demand is still very high and sometimes overshoots supply, it's still not what it was back in the 70s and 80s, where, you know, you're looking at 400-600%, you know, markup. So so we are getting there, but
definitely.
Okay. Let's jump over to natural and clean label. We know these are undefined, you know, terms legally, but they do have certain expectations. And what cautions would you have for the processor who wants to label their product as such, as natural or clean label?
Yeah, when we have clients that are looking for that label, sometimes they have very unrealistic expectations of what they can label as natural, right? So we tend to be very conservative. The chances of the FDA knocking on your door with a warning letter are probably fairly slim, but if that happens, you're done, right? So we really want to be conservative about what, you know, are we really considering this natural? Like, how liberally are we reading the definition? And I think that there are a lot of liberties taken with that definition because it's broad, and the FDA and the USDA don't want to define it any further because that's definitely more work on their plate.
They've made little inroads from what I understand, yeah, they're not going to, I think the latest I read was what you just said, that they are not eager, let's say, to nail down those terms. And I understand why, you know, I can see both sides of that. So,
and I still have hopes that they, you know, they will further define that and make it easier for consumers and manufacturers to kind of say, here's the line in the sand, don't cross it. And consumers are savvy. They're becoming much better label readers, and they really are asking more questions and pushing that back on the suppliers. So we see a huge influx of people who say, when I say, you know, what is your definition of clean label? Like, where are your lines in the sand? And they say, oh, follow the Whole Food guidelines or follow the Trader Joe's list, right? There's these lists that are out there that are very hundreds of ingredients long, but they really are setting the industry standards, and they're fairly strict. So when we see that kind of guideline being followed by other companies, they're setting the standard. Consumers understand those standards, and it just kind of follows. And I think some of that is, you know, what you read and what you see, what's evil today and is good tomorrow, right? I think celery is a great example, is a natural curative, right? So we see, let's get the nitrates and nitrites out of bacon, for example, or food products, and let's add celery powder. Right. So does it look great on a label to a consumer? Sure. Does it matter that you might be adding celery powder that has just the same or more of the same product to that bacon? It's just a natural form. Exactly. I think some of that's going to come down the pipeline as consumers understand these issues and can you find a really reputable celery powder supplier that can dial in those levels and is very consistent, right? I think things like that are going to be more in the forefront and really fine tune that definition of natural and what is acceptable for ingredients as we go along the way.
What would you see as the next big shift that's coming in the world of organic processing, and why?
I hope it's adding the sustainability piece. I think that's very, very important to consumers. When you ask consumers how they feel, like what's important to them, their core values in food, sustainability always rises to the top. So I would love to see that. There's a lot of positives, right, that come out of organic products. So when you see the biodiversity that you can get in a field, the use of no pesticides and no synthetic fertilizers, all those things are really great for the land. You're producing less carbon emissions with organic farming. But there's also some downsides that I'm not sure that consumers are aware of or are important enough yet to be replaced. So there are plastic sheets that are put down, for example, on fields, and they can't use biodegradable sheets because they have petroleum contained within. So how can we get past that, you know, to add to that sustainability level and make it organic and very sustainable? We talk about lower crop yield, right?
Yeah,
we're going to get lower crop yield with organic ingredients. So I know that there's work being done on that to improve that so that it doesn't look so unattractive to a potential farmer, and getting the cost down. Like you said, the cost has been coming down slowly and steadily, so that I think it will be a nice opportunity to say, here's the opportunities and you can choose based on what you feel is best, not based on I can't afford that or, you know, that's out of my price range. I think some of those things will definitely come to play. I hope that kind of is integrated into that organic market. And I would love to see them tackle plant-based. I think that plant-based products, the first gen were very highly processed. And especially when you talk about flavor first, some of the first ones were pretty terrible tasting from a chef perspective, right? They served a purpose. They were functional, but they didn't taste great. And so I think we've seen this huge evolution, putting flavor first and starting to see that evolution of, well, these are just as high in saturated fats and they are highly processed. So moving towards that, okay, now they're better for me and I don't just feel better about eating them because they might be better for the environment, but because they're healthier. They're, you know, I feel good about eating these products. And we see, you know, 95% of consumers that are consuming plant-based products, they're eating meat too. So it's not an all or nothing. It's
right.
It's not just for vegan. Absolutely. And so I think that's why they've been successful, is they're not targeting a very tiny, you know, subset of the population. So they do have widespread appeal. So they'll continue to improve along the way.
I want to thank you. This is all, you know, very truly just insightful, helpful, great. Thank you, Chef Rittman. A very informative interview. I want to thank our audience members for joining us. I'm hoping you found this deep dive into organic product development as enlightening as I did. I'm David Fetter, Executive Editor Technical for Prepared Foods Media. This was a look into the world of organic processing with Chef Allison Rittman, research chef, organic expert, and founder of Culinary Culture Product Development Group. You can reach her at arittman@culinary-culture.com. But also head to our media menu and catch our It's Only Natural webinar, also featuring Chef Rittman. And then while you're in the media menu, you're also going to find a number of other videos, podcasts, articles, and resources of value for today's food and beverage makers. So till next time, thanks.
Thank you, David.